Welcome to the Big Success Podcast, cutting-edge conversations on business and personal success, as well as how to level up. Here's your host, number one business coach in the world, Brad Sugars.
I cannot explain just how much knowledge this man has around success. Having coached literally sporting teams, nations, world champs, Olympic gold medalists, Frank Dick, OBE, obviously, renowned as one of the best coaches in the world. He now coaches on how to perform and how to achieve amazing things. His talent for inspiring athletes and inspiring teams and getting the highest level of performance out of organizations is second to none. The book, this is the first one of his I read, Winning Matters. I luckily got to meet him in 2016. We did a conference together in Wales. Years and years of detailed research into individual and sporting team success, and he's going to give it to you today in spades. Great storyteller, Frank Dick, my guest today on the Big Success Podcast. Well, it is my absolute pleasure, buddy, to have you on here. 2016, we first got to meet in Wales. I've always wondered, with such a resume of success, how will you answer this question? What is success to Frank Dick? What is your definition?
Well, I think it was trying to sort of stand back and look at it. It's knowing that what you've done and how you've done it is why you've achieved your goal. It's that fantastic feeling you get, I did it, you know, I got there. That can be directly personal. It can be your role in a team. It can be your leadership role. And for most of my life, it's been achieved through other people, because being a coach, your success is a vicarious one. It goes through other people. But that's the feeling, Brad. And I mean, I'll tell you a silly story about this. I was during the Commonwealth Games in Edmonton, the day before the finals, the Scottish 4x100 meters relay team had qualified absolutely against all odds, because you're talking about Jamaica, Canada, England, and there was no chance. But we were in the final, and I went every night. I used to go for this jog down around the lake and get back in to get rid of all the crap from the day. And this Canadian coach was running towards me. He said, "Hey, Frankie, all the best tomorrow, mate." I said, "Yeah, thanks very much." And the next day, would you believe, against all the odds, they not only got the gold medal, they got the games record. And I was doing the same run the next night. And you can imagine, it was feeling pretty cool. And I went round the same lake, and there's the same coach running towards me. And he said, "Frankie, you were great today." And without even thinking, I said, "I know." And it must have sounded so arrogant.
Yeah.
But I didn't need anybody to tell me. And you know the same feeling, right? You don't need people to tell you when you know you've cracked it.
Yeah.
That's
You know, I've never heard anyone think about it as a feeling. Has that evolved for you over time? Like, as a young man, did you see it that way, or did it evolve over time?
Well, I think it evolved over time, because I really didn't do very well at school, and I was pretty fortunate enough, given a second chance, I managed to get into Loughborough and so on. And it kind of grew over a period of time, and different things began to resonate with me. So another anecdote was, I was organizing this big conference in Edinburgh. It was a freezing cold winter, one of the worst Scotland had ever had. And it was the very first international conference I'd ever run. You know, so you can imagine I was really nervous as a kitten. And the weather had been so bad, but the university had closed the heating down on the 1st of December, and the conference was on the 4th of January, and they only switched it back on again on the 3rd. And it was minus 14 out there, right? So the people coming in from all over the world, the Russians were there with their funny hats on, you know, guys were wearing coats up to the neck, steam coming out of the mouths all over the place. And I was mortified. And I went to see my boss, Bob Adams, and said, "Bob," and he said, "Don't say anything more, Frankie. You know your problem? You think that 99% is a failure. Most people in life think that 51% is a win." And I remember looking at him and saying, "Bob, I'm never going to be a 51% person.
Yeah.
I can't be that way. And I think that at that point, it was like I was beginning to understand that it's about living up to your standards, you know. And I mean, I haven't really thought of it. These are great questions, Brad. I've never really thought about this in depth before, but because you've tested this one, I have done a little bit of thinking about it. I mean, it's living up to your standards. And in our coaching role and leadership roles, or even a member of team, getting other people to live up to them too. So, I mean, that's kind of the feeling.
Yeah. So when, like, I know for me, when I chose success in my life, I remember it as a 13-year-old boy choosing that's what I'm going to do. Was there a time when you chose it, or was it a gradual thing, or was it just natural in your family?
Well, good question. Since you come into the teen years, I wasn't really all that good at sport at school, but I got to the age of, I think it was 15, so a little bit later than you. I was running the school half mile for the school sports, and I finished third. And I suddenly realized, that sounds crazy,
yeah,
I could have been first. That's what I wanted to be first. And there was a school match coming up against another school. And I got a hold of one of the guys who was ahead of me in that race. And because I knew he was a hurdler, I said, look, I think you should concentrate on the hurdles. And I know you don't like half miles. I'll do that one for you. And that was it. The light had gone on at this point.
Yeah.
Now I didn't be anything other than first, not second best.
I love it. I love that question. So what is your formula for success? Like, how do you see success happening? There must be a methodology over the years you've developed.
No, I think quite honestly, I used to think that success was something that happened, but it's not true. You have to make it happen or it's not yours.
Mm.
No, you're in the game for that. You make success happen. And it comes down to performance, but just to linger a bit on the making it happen, I'm quite sure you remember the guy Chris Hadfield, the Canadian astronaut who went up to space, and he sang Ground Control to Major Tom as he was floating around in the capsule. When he came back down again, he wrote a book, The Astronaut's Guide to Life on Earth. And the book really focuses on the fact that astronauts are trained to expect it not to go well. They're trained to make it work. It's your job. Don't expect the airlocks to be working. Which is kind of scary, you know, you're going to go out into space. But it's down to you to make it work. And that made me think all the way back in time. What one of the things I had to understand is I couldn't win everything to begin with, right?
That was it.
But I could get better. And in track and field and in swimming, these are nice objective sports, you know. We work from the very outset on encouraging kids to improve their personal best. So you focus first of all in their life journey to be towards success or whatever. You focus first of all on performance. You're not in total control of results in life, but you are in total control of your performance. You know, own that and make it happen. And if you keep working on it, one day you'll be the best in the world. And do you stop thinking about it then? No. Usain Bolt goes to Beijing, right? He whacks the world 100 meters and 200 meters record. Next year, he goes to Berlin. Now, at this point in his life, nobody can touch him. You know, he's over the horizon. So why did he break the world record in the 100 meters and the 200 meters again?
Mm.
It's about your performance. Whether you're in the lead or whether you're following, it comes down to have you prepared for your performance and are you doing it? And, of course, that's the essence of what we deal with in life as coaches. That's the essence of what we do. It's about helping other people improve their performance. And I remember saying to the first time I worked with Eddie Jones back in 2020, he was with the England team. I remember saying to the coaches there, you know, what he wanted to do. well, we want to win the World Cup. I said, well, what does that look like? Said, what do you mean? Well, what do you have to do? Well, you have to beat the All Blacks. You'll have to be, no, no, no. That's a bad answer. You have to look, you're making the mistake of looking at what excellence is like today and thinking that's all you have to do to be excellent tomorrow. But what you have to understand is, what will excellence look like tomorrow? At that point, it was the second of November 2015, 8 o'clock in the evening at the Yokohama Stadium. What will excellence look like then? And then can you be better than that? And you've got to prepare your athletes for that. But by the way, as coaches, if you're not going to be the best in the world, how are the athletes going to be the best in the world? So this, everything, if you're looking for achievement or success in a business or in a sport or whatever, it's everybody. You know, it's not just the guys who go out there and fight in the field. It's not just the sales staff. It's not just the marketing department. It's all of you.
Yeah.
And if you're not all willing to improve your performance, because you won't all be world-class at the moment, we get that. You might have a couple of guys in the team, but for the others, they're trying to make their way. And I'll come back to a story on that later.
Yeah. So let me flip that over just for a second then. Those that learn from their mistakes, those that turn failure into success, what is the key? How do they do that versus those who have failure and resign themselves to it?
Okay. On that one, Brad, I'd have to take a step further back in that, or earlier in the story.
Mm.
You achieve in life through the process of preparation and so on to get there, because you have to prepare for that. The key then is to understand how important process is and to stick with it. Take care of the process, in my mind, and you'll take care of the result. Or as a little like Bill Wall said, take care of performance and the score takes care of itself.
Mm.
It's that kind of thinking, you know. Progression, you have to remember, in any process is non-linear. I mean, it's not like a rocket taking off for the moon and so on. It goes in steps. And sometimes it goes in dips. And you've got to understand that on that journey, it's just part of the process. You'll stumble sometimes and you'll fall. You'll also have moments when you fail. But the key is, since we're trying to make progress, the key is to understand that, I think somebody else came up with the word, fail fast, right? If you're going to make your mistakes, if you're going to stumble, get over the line. And why is that a probability? Okay, it's a really simple question I have to ask some people. Listen, if I'm asking you to change things, change the way you do things, if I'm asking you to change how we're going to play here, how you're going to sell, how you're going to market, do you think there's a better chance of you making a mistake when you've gone beyond the familiar than if you stay behind the familiar? Yeah, we're going to make them, folks. So just accept, before you get on the journey, this is part of process. Key in all of that is, can you learn fast? Now, okay, I'll modify that, because I used to stick with the quote from Ari DeJuice, and I think the first time you and I met, I'm pretty sure I put it up on the screen. Probably the only sustainable competitive advantage we have is the ability to learn faster than the opposition. Well, I was pulled up short by a guy called Vin Walsh, one of the top learning psychologists on the planet, I think. And he said to me, no, Frankie, it's to learn better and faster than the opposition. Learn better. And one of the things that got me thinking about that is, wow, you know, well, how do I learn better? I mean, I don't know about you, Brad, but I don't remember anyone sitting me down and helping me learn how to learn.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really be saying that.
I do remember as a young man, I'm guessing I was 21, I actually attended a training program called Learning to Learn because of that fact. I was like, I didn't even know how to learn. You're on the Big Success Podcast. We're here with Frank Dick. We're going to be back in a moment. We're going to talk about winning and team and leadership, and we're going to get all of his insights.
In Instant Promotions, Brad Sugars outlines how to find target markets, locate appropriate media representatives, write world-class press releases, and attract customers through innovative, tailored promotional campaigns. Pick up Instant Promotions today.
You're back on the Big Success Podcast. I'm Brad Sugars, the Frank Dick. You know, one of the best coaches ever to have existed. How do we succeed, Frank, at being a great coach? How do we succeed at that?
Okay, well, first of all, there's something that I did want to mention a bit earlier, and that is, I was speaking to, you'll know a coach, Alex Ferguson.
Yes.
Ferguson, you know him. And I brought Alex in to do a bit of chat to some coaches at one point, and his opening line was, the two things you've got to be really careful of if you're going to be a successful coach is you've got to be able to manage failure and success, right? Now, failure I got, right? We've just discussed that. But why success? Well, success, if you're not careful, can be a serious seductress.
Mm-hmm.
She can convince you that you've arrived. But the truth is, if you're going to get into the success game, into the success arena, you never arrive. You're chasing the horizon. There's always something else called perfection beyond the horizon.
Mm.
Excellence is something we can all work on and we can deliver. We can do that. And then you redefine it. But the truth is, you're on a journey to try to get to perfection, and it's like the horizon. It just keeps moving ahead of you. You never arrive. And so we've got to be careful. My mum taught me success breeds success. Well, I wasn't very successful, so I was struggling a bit. And But then Alex said success can derail progress.
Yeah.
And that's because of, you can get complacent and you can just say, well, I'm there. Just why do I have to change a winning formula?
Yeah.
Well, the truth is you'd better change a winning formula because other guys are going to come up and be better at that than you.
Dang, so clear. Actually, I was listening to an interview with a great golfer just recently, and he said, you know, I have 7 bad shots a round. He said, I never have a perfect round. I have 7 bad shots on average. When I hit one, I just go, oh, there's one of my 7. And then I move on to the next thing. Frank, you've taught so many coaches. What are the top things that you think a coach should learn to be better at coaching? And in essence, business people are coaches of their people too, I guess.
Okay, so just lingering with that, let me give you kind of a sense of case study from my world, if you like. Mm. Here's the first one, because it was a success moment. I was a coach to the UK team, and they were competing in what was called the European Cup. Now, the European Cup is the top 8 nations men and top 8 nations women competing for separate cups, and not necessarily the same nations in each.
Yep.
Each competition, but we, the UK team, had a team in both. And in this competition, just to explain the numbers on the thing, in this competition, there are 20 events on the men's side, 100 meters, 200 meters, and so on. There are 8 teams taking part. You get eight points if you only one entry per event, 8 points if you're first, 1 if you're last. So maximum number of points we're looking for, 160.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I did, at that point, the British team, at the very best, were a bad third on numbers. And so I did what you would do. I went through everybody's performance in the other teams, in my team, on a good and a bad day. And I concluded that we were 14 points away from the big two, the Soviet Union and the German Democratic Republic. And so I wondered, how do I get over to my kids that between today and tomorrow, they individually could do something to create a team success, bearing in mind that track and field is a very individual sport. They're competing with each other. Go to any business. All the sales guys, the people are competing with each other, right? But they're winning. They're wearing the same badge. They're part of the same organization. So I tried this. Today and tomorrow, you've got a 14-point mountain to climb. It's a mountain because you can't come back next week. This is the one. It only happens today and tomorrow. It's 14 points because that's the difference between what you're worth on paper and what the opposition is. But if you are worth 1 point to one section of the room, if you're worth 1 point on paper, and you can turn it to two. You give me just the same step up the mountain as you guys who are worth 5 points can deliver six. And as for you, Linford Christie and Colin Jackson, all I ever expect from you is eight, so don't give me seven. The kids were going out the room. They were looking at my papers to see what I had done for them, shaking their head, muttering about me. But this is just what I wanted them to do. I wanted them to understand that by getting to the top of their individual mountain, they would make a difference. They would make a difference. The scene now goes to the stadium, into the events, into the ring for the first event. Hammer was goes a guy called Shane Peacock, who was a second reserve, worth 1 point on a good day. And he gets in, the kids are all shouting at him, come on, Shane, give us another point. And he gave them two. He got 3 points. Chris Akabuzi was worth five, he delivered eight. The kids in the warm-up area, normally when they saw the blue vests of East Germany or the red vests of Soviet Union, they were running to the toilet. Now they wanted to tear the tracksuit off. Let me out there, I'm going to give you my points now. After the 2 days, the men had the trophy, the women the highest number of points ever recorded by a West European team. How is that possible? As a coach, making sure that you create opportunity for your people to take ownership. Because once they do that, and they commit to that, and engage with that, that will make the difference. This is a people business, Brad. And that was the biggest lesson that I've learned from you, I have to say, in addition. But in my journey through the... You have to be good at the technical business, you know, which leg do you move first, which back. You have to know that. But you better understand the people business, or there's no point of having the technical business stuff at all. And the way I saw that is that there are some things in life you can be taught. You can be taught the science of coaching, the technical bits and pieces, but you can only learn the art, and that's through experience. The problem with experience, as Vernon Law summed up, was she's the cruelest of all teachers because she gives you the test first and the lesson second. Mm. But the fact is, you'd better have the test, but more importantly, you'd better have a coach there to help make sure that you've learned a lesson from the test afterwards.
Dang.
So I don't know if that helps. Another bit about coaching that you may be interested in. If I could use Daley Thompson as an example, again, for business and for sport. Daley was double Olympic gold medalist, world record holder. I coached Daley. And the decathlon, just for the viewers and listeners, decathlon is 10 events, you know, 100 meters, 400 meters, hurdles and so on. And there are field events, jumps and throws. And as a coach, I knew I couldn't coach all of the events, not to the level that he needed me to be. And I always tried to live this idea of there are three things you have to know in life. You've got to know what you know, you've got to know what you don't know, and you've got to know somebody who does and get them into the party. And so what we did, there were five other coaches involved to make sure that Daley had the right development program. Now, my role at that point, I figured, and we've all got our own definitions of what good leadership is, but my picture of great leadership is you're the conductor of an orchestra. You know, you've got to have people in front of you who are everything from a soloist to somebody fresh out of college. You've got strings, you've got brass, you've got woodwind, you've got all of these things going, and they all know the role that they've got to play, and it's your job to make sure that nobody's stronger than somebody else. That you create, as a conductor of the orchestra, you create harmony from the diversity that's in front of you. I mean, that's your job. Now, when you're coaching somebody, an individual like a Daley Thompson, it would be like me coaching you, Brad, or coaching a leader, or coaching somebody. There are different parts of your job that have got to be somehow or other be brought together in a balanced way to allow you to get the score that you need to be, your performance to be as great as you can be. I couldn't allow the throws coach to make Daley so heavy to throw the throws that he couldn't jump or sprint anymore. So I think that's another part of the art, if you like, of coaching, is understanding that balance. And a lot of people say to me, what you should be doing then, Frankie, is you have to concentrate on the weaknesses. No, That's absolutely the wrong way around, in my opinion. If I've brought you into the team, Brad, I've brought you in because of your strengths. My first priority in life is to make sure these strengths continue to grow. I'll only make a weakness a priority if it interferes with your ability to deliver that strength, or in a team situation, if it's interfering with other people's abilities to do their strength. Do these things make sense for business from your point of view?
100%, 100%. So I want to go back to this one, the first book of yours that I got to read. When you talk, well, I guess the first question for everybody listening, though, because I've read the book, I want everyone to read it. Why did you call it Winning Matters? I think this is important for everyone to understand. Why name it Winning Matters?
Well, that comes back to the, you know, and thanks for appreciating the first point I was trying to make, how you feel about success. It comes back to that, you know, Brad. And I know this will sound really harsh, but if losing doesn't hurt, winning doesn't matter, right? That's the feeling part in the whole thing. And I kind of feel that sense of challenge. I mean, you know, so many people will talk about motivation and put a price on it. You know, you'll get a bonus this year, you'll get this next year, you'll get a new car and so on. But truly, the greatest motivation is the right challenge. It's having the right challenge in front of you and buying into that, you know, and really engaging with it. I mean, I've got quite a nice garden. I have to say it's mostly down to Linda, my wife, and the gardener, but I get involved in there every now and again. And it took me a while to realize this, but I began to understand, I felt a challenge to make the roses beautiful, because these are my priority in the garden. And it suddenly dawned on me one day, it doesn't matter what you do, Frankie, they're destined to be beautiful. It's your job to make sure that the things that might stop that happening are dealt with. And so there's a new challenge. I mean, I'm not sure if I've really been clear on this from the outset, is that it's about seeing challenges, addressing them, and knowing at the end of the day that what you did and how you did it is why that's happening in front of you, you know? And is that okay, then?
That's perfect. Gang, you're on the Big Success Podcast. We're going to be back in just a moment. I'm going to ask Frank about how do you scale up? What's the difference between those who do good and those who become absolute champions?
Renowned as one of the country's best and most consistently inspiring motivational speakers, Frank Dick is the current chair of Scottish Athletics, as well as chair of the IAAF Academy. To learn more about Frank Dick, please visit frankdick.co.uk.
Frank, what is, in your mind, the difference between the did great and the absolute champions? You've coached both ends of the scale. What's the difference?
Okay, well, first of all, if we can take you back into my world again. There's a notional journey that an athlete takes. They start off as beginners, they're developers, and one day they're high performers. And that journey, I think a lot of people get into the head that what it is you start off as a Fiat Uno, and you finish off as a Ferrari Testarossa. Okay? And I get that. But the more you get into working with really high achievers, you realize that they are not part of that journey. They fracture it somewhere along the line. And so going back to my analogy, what's the connection between a Ferrari Formula One car and a Testarossa? They may have the same brand, but they're not the same motor, and they're not the same. You need different people driving them, mm-hmm. and you need different people coaching and preparing them, and so on. And so I think, and I did a I'll just digress for a second. I did a seminar, so a webinar for India 2 years ago with a guy called Ani Gulish. I brought him in, who's one of the top guys on talent identification. And we spent 4 days, 4 hours a day with different speakers and so on. And the conclusion at the end of that is you're wasting your time trying to spot talent. Right? And his argument was talent emerges. Talent, you can't. How many sports do you know that come to the age of 16, for example, and they go to do a trawl and they find some kids are better than other kids, they bring them in and they're on the high performance pathway and go all the way through. They do this in track and field very, very often. I'm going to ask you to take I'm pretty sure it will be an educated guess on this one. Of the athletes in the world who get a world championships junior medal, that's right, 19 years of age, how many of them do you think medal in the senior competition when they get into the...
An educated guess would be it's a fairly low number.
Yeah. Would you imagine less than 10%?
I would imagine less than 10%, yes. Yeah. Why? So that's a great point.
In sport, and maybe you can alter the ages on this, but in track and field, 65% of the medalists will be 60% of the medals will be between the ages of 24 and 28 in the Olympic Games, World Championships, roughly speaking, and 85% between 22 and 30. Right. So we know the peak performance years. So something's not happening. But either something's not happening between 19 and 22, or something has not been addressed properly before then.
Mm.
And in my simplistic language, when I'm speaking to coaches about this, I say, you've got to be careful you don't squeeze all the juice out the orange too early.
Yeah.
And what they discovered in the research that Arnie was doing is that if you have people as late as possible doing several disciplines, several different sports, on the foundation of that, they are more likely to medal as seniors than the kids who specialize early on.
Wow.
And I don't know how relevant that is to business, but what it made me think about, and I've only loosely discussed this with people who know business far better than me, and so, well, why when people come into your business, why do they not get a chance to play other positions or do other roles and not the one that they've come in for? And as if to support that, I don't know if you remember the footballer called Johan Cruyff.
No.
He was a Dutch soccer player, brilliant player, and he went on to be a manager. When he was with Barcelona, I had to do a conference across in Spain, and we were both on stage. And one of the things that he explained to me, he said, you know, when people get selected for the youth team, for the first two years, they must learn to play out of position as often as they play in position. Only in that way do they understand how other players in the team see the game.
Yeah.
And only in that way can you give them the right level of support to make the team gel properly.
Yeah.
And again, I don't know how relevant that is to business, but it seemed to me that it could be relevant.
Yeah, look, it comes so relevant that when I coach business owners, I find that business owners who've only ever done one thing, like they were an engineer for 20 years, they don't have 20 years business experience. They've got 1 year's experience. They just did it 20 times type thing. And so it's that mix. Frank, I want to dive into the quick fire round and just ask you a couple of very fast ones, fast question, fast answer. How do you succeed at setting goals? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, they're constantly changing. One of the things that I would like to feed in here is that it's really important in life that you disrupt your thinking from time to time, at least once a year, maybe a couple of times. And I see that, you know, asking people, what if we did something different? Why not do something different? What are our other options? What are our possibilities? And I see it kind of like Newton's cradle. You take the ball off one end, call it disruption. You let it go, you have dreams. The next ball is decisions. The next ball is design. And the next ball that flies off the other end is delivery. But remember, it's coming back again. And you've got, of course, I can understand that some people can say, well, I've got one goal in life, but you don't. You've got multiple goals in life, for goodness sake. You might have a grand purpose, a grand vision, a grand mission. But in between time, you've got to give yourself short-term goals, medium-term goals, and use these as a bit of challenge and competition, because that gives you the feeling of success. It breeds success on the way through.
Love it. Love it. What about self-development? How do we succeed at developing ourselves and focusing on that personal development?
Well, first of all, don't stick in your own patch. Always look outside. One of the things I really enjoyed working with Eddie was, for example, we invited in a personal friend of mine, Boris Verkovsky, who was the chief coach for the Cirque du Soleil. Now, you might say, well, what's that got to do with rugby? What's that got to do with track and field and so on? But he had a special mind about how to create movement that we'd never heard before.
Yeah.
And I think that your personal development, of course, you've got to be driven for it. And wrapping up in that, by the way, that for your own personal development, there are three big parts to it. There's your physical, there's your mental, and there's also your emotional. And when you're looking at development, you have to look at all of these things. And then at the other end of that, when it comes to recovery, you know, when you're exhausted out there, please remember that there's different processes in recovering from physical fatigue, from mental fatigue, and from emotional fatigue. Emotional investment, if it's not properly managed, can be on the one hand, people can achieve great things, but on the other hand, once it gets negative, you can be dragged down a really deep hole.
Yeah.
And one of the most important things I say to coaches is, make sure that your emotional corridor is one that everybody understands. You never go too high, you never go too low. They look to you as a coach for emotional stability. And a lot of people miss that out, you know. Empathy, emotional intelligence. We used to think of these as real softy things as a coach. But now I know they're really, really important.
Frank, Coaches Hall of Fame, sporting hero, final question. What is the best advice you ever got or the best quote you ever read on the subject of success?
Okay, I knew you were going to ask me this, and I had a good think about it, and I have three for you.
Got it.
Okay? One of them is Aristotle, and believe it or not, I never met him personally. He was quite a lot before me. His point was, excellence is an art won by training and habituation. We are what we repeatedly do. Excellence, then, is not an act, it's a habit. I love that one. Coming back to my earlier point about the people business, I love these words from George Washington Carver. How far you go in life depends on your being tender with the young, compassionate with the aged, sympathetic with the striving, and tolerant both of the weak and of the strong, because sometime in life, you'll have to be all of these. And my final one is one that I coined about excellence, but I'll put it into your world of success now. Athletes make success happen. Coaches make success possible. That's what we're there to do.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, the Frank Dick. Read all the books, go to the show notes, follow everything, do as much study as you can, rewatch the podcast, most definitely. We'll be back next week with more on your success. And that's a big success podcast for today. Hopefully you took a lot of notes and hopefully you learned a bunch. and hopefully you're going to take action on it and refer people. Remember, if you haven't subscribed, click that subscribe button now. Be with us every week on the Big Success Podcast. BS, Brad Sugar's Big Success. Take action. Check the show notes for all the links. I'll give you all the links for everything that your speaker had. Make sure you follow through and keep the learning going. Remember, you got to grow into your goals. I'll speak to you next time on the Big Success Podcast.
You've been listening to the Big Success Podcast with the number one business coach in the world, Brad Sugars. To learn more about how to achieve business and personal success, as well as how to level up or listen to past episodes, visit www.bradsugars.com.